Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. I enjoy talking to retirement coaches because there are so many facets to consider as we prepare to leave the 9-to-5. We are all different, so we want our post 9-to-5 to reflect our wishes, our desires, our plans for this next chapter. Just as we are different, retirement coaches bring different methods and thoughts to the table, and we are only made more prepared by listening to their similarities and their differences. Wendy brings insights today into considerations for retirement and into some misconceptions about retirement. Forewarned is forearmed, as my mom used to say. Wendy also discusses pro-aging and positive aging, two of my favorite subjects. I will give you a quick heads up. The recording gods were a bit moody when Wendy and I recorded our conversation, so parts of this are a bit glitchy. It's intermittent, so please stick with us. Listen now. How do you define, air quotes, retirement? Did you just have a jumble of thoughts? Hobbies, grandchildren, travel, cruises, home renos, a new business. And then perhaps a bit of monetary panic sets in. The other thought you might have had is, what retirement? I'm not going anywhere. Sometimes there's an unexpected event, like a change of leadership that absolutely doesn't work for you, and leaving becomes very important to you. That's what happened to me a bunch of years ago. That's what happened to today's guest. You know what I'm doing these days? Wendy earned her designation as a professional certified coach, and then she got advanced credentials in career transitions, positive mindset building, and retirement readiness. She says, "This journey transformed me personally, shifting me from a driven, head-centered approach to one that embraces balance, empathy, and a positive aging mindset." A positive aging mindset. I believe if we have one about ourselves, then it might rub off on those around us. Today, we'll mostly talk about retirement planning, all facets of retirement planning, because it's not just about the money. Wendy Leggett, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you and your listeners, Agnes.
Now, as I mentioned in my intro, you and I left pretty great jobs due to a change at the top. But what was that realization process for you?
Yeah, it was actually kind of a slow burn. Yours sounds like it was maybe, hopefully for you, had a little more clarity. Mine was when I was working for a couple as a director of a number of franchises and loved them. And we were doing great things. I was in the sales leadership role. And so on every front, it was just so enjoyable, so invigorating. And then we were doing so well that it was kind of the kiss of death because they decided then it was a great time to sell. And so in came the new owner. And whereas he loved having me on board, I learned very quickly that his philosophy was very, very a match to mine. I found that he really, as he approached my team members, as he approached my customers, he just had a very different value set. And so it was one of those things that, and maybe all of you can kind of relate to this, that we figure out, well, I can make this work. I can figure out a way, I can crack the code. So I tried every which way from having conversations with him to trying to soften expectations around my clients, around trying to navigate things with my team members. And it just got to the point where it was just soul sucking. And so it really came to that point where, yeah, I could continue, but at what cost? And so I really just figured out, you know what, I have to make a change. And so it was at that juncture that it was like, do I go, because my background was in corporate sales leadership. So shall I go into another job? And I really gave myself that opportunity to reflect and think, you know what, it's just no longer really matching who I am. And honestly, Agnes, in retrospect, I don't know that it ever really did. I did well at it. And you know, when we do well at things, sometimes we don't stop and really dig a bit deeper. But in any event, at that point I did. And so I kind of went on a journey to discover what would be next, and I discovered coaching. So I can share more about that, but that's what happened for me.
Yeah, and it sounds like it almost, you were doing more running interference than you were doing the job.
At that point, I definitely was. Yeah. And so then that's, you know, we don't want to come from that place because then we're not really building up of our strengths. We're not bringing our best selves to ourselves and to anyone else. And so,
So now you're happily a retirement coach. Let's jump in. Beyond the financials, what else is critical for retirement success?
such a great question, and that is where I live with my clients, is what, retirement beyond the financials, because we know that there's such a focus on that. It's foundational, and we need to have money in order to survive. At the same time, oftentimes it supersedes our whole selves, and so it can really take over, and we think that if we have our financial house in order, then everything else will fall into place. But the reality is that one in three struggle in retirement. And I think that's that dirty little secret that people aren't aware of, that amongst the visions of it being endless weekends and leisure and travel, there are the realities. Just because we leave the career behind, we don't leave all of the other factors in life that impact us, and the need to look at our emotional well-being, our mental well-being, our physical, our spiritual, our social well-being. So those are the areas in general that I go into, but with a lot of pathways to allow people to see that beyond the financials, we're bringing our whole selves into retirement. So what do we want to leave behind, from our career? What patterns and habits don't serve us any longer? And what do we want to bring with us so that that transition, both from the external change of roles and that internal change that happens, is honored and respected and dug into.
Do your clients come to you because leaving the 9 to 5 is in the crosshairs, or do they come to you after the fact because the glow of full-time pickleball has worn off and the grandchildren have lives, busy lives too? So, the post 9 to 5 isn't at all what these people expected.
Yes, I serve both. So I serve people that are planning for retirement, and there are individuals that really see that, wow, I want more for myself than what I see out there that others are doing, or that the media is portraying it as, or even that I don't even know what, I don't know what to do. And so having that confusion or even that fear or that feeling of stuckness before they've retired. And then I have those that when the honeymoon phase wears off, like you shared, then they're feeling like, wow, is this all there is to it? Isn't there more for me in life? Or it starts to feel like Groundhog's Day. And so then I work with people, and I'm kind of simplifying it because people don't fall in just one or two camps. Everybody has their own story and their own path. And I really respect that. But I do work with people both pre and post.
Now, you mentioned significant misconceptions about retirement. Let's get those out of the way. What are the misconceptions?
Yeah, well, that one in three struggles in retirement is a real big one. This idea that once we are out of career and we're thinking, oh, it'll be a stress-free life and it'll be freedom and it'll be, like I said, endless weekends, and then the reality sets in, or we do the to-do list and we do the bucket list and we do the traveling, and then we just say, wow, what's happening? So I think that that's one of those myths that we need to bust, is that without being planful, without being aware, and without being really in tune to what we want, we can be living somebody else's retirement. I call it, let's have a retirement by design, not default, because oftentimes people can really just either phone it in or
Sorry, one of my things is design your own next chapter. That was then, this is now, design your own next chapter. So I love it when people use that word design for this time of life. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I had one client that really stands out in my mind. I've had others that are similar, but with her, she was about 2 years out of retirement, and she came to me because I had worked with one of her family members. And so she said, I'm ready for retirement too, and so I'd like to get underway with you. But as we started talking about things, it became very clear she wasn't ready for retirement. Her definition of retirement was based on others, and all of her family members had retired at 62, and they were really pushing on her, putting a lot of pressure on her to retire. And so she was just following that path. But when we unpacked it, it became very clear she felt very gratified in her work. They really, admired and enjoyed and wanted to keep her. She had great balance in her life. She felt that she was spending as much time as she wanted with those family members. Now, exactly, but you know what I mean. And so the key there, and the key I really want to impart, is that we are at choice. I mean, yes, if circumstances beyond our control make it so that we don't get to make the decision and we have to retire sooner than we planned, that puts it in a different realm. However, we're still the CEOs of ourselves. We're still the leaders of our lives. And so, yes, it would require a reframe and a pivot, but everything that we've done, everything that we are, doesn't go away when we move into retirement. And so, circling back then to that one client, and which might be coming up for some of your listeners, is that there's this idea that you should retire at a certain age. And though we know that those shoulds are external factors. And so we need to dig deep and say, but what's right for me? Because we are the owners of our own destiny and the CEO of you, as I speak about. So that's another area that I think is really important. Also that on average, 47 hours of TV a week is how retirees spend their time. And so, yeah. And so that's a really, I think that's something that we wouldn't expect. You know, I think that the myth is that people are out there doing everything, you know, that's exciting and new and energizing. But the reality is that the general population that's retired has shifted their full-time job into a full-time job of watching TV. And so we need to really recognize, well, why is that happening? And there is this epidemic of loneliness throughout the, you know, our world. There's this disconnection, especially with using technology as much as we do. People can become very separated. And we know that we're social creatures. And so another myth is that we'll be able to carry all those connections that we had from work into retirement, or that we'll have this friend circle and that will sustain us. But the reality is that we need to dig deep and look at who is in our circle, and are they energizers or drainers, and are there people that we haven't maybe spent time with that we would like to try to reinvigorate that relationship. And yes, at any age we can develop fresh friends. So all of those things I think are important too. And the myth that, you know, again, if the finances are in order, everything else will come into play. But we know that that connection piece is a critical factor also. So those are some that come to mind. I can mention several others, but what comes up for you as I share those, Agnes?
Well, I was thinking too that so many people, I mean, by this age, we've had jobs for decades. And oftentimes we identify ourselves by that role, and we don't know who to be without some planning post-retirement. So you talk about purpose and identity. How do you go about reframing both of those as people start looking at it?
Yeah, critical factors for sure. So speaking about identity, there's a saying, if you are what you do, who are you when you don't? And so when we leave career behind, we can really feel as though we've left pieces of ourselves behind. And oftentimes our lives are so interwoven with our work that when we leave that work, then it is difficult to figure out, well, who am I? And yet we know that our roles have changed, but the essence of who we are and have always been doesn't change. And I think oftentimes that we see those superficial things out there that, oh, I'm no longer doing this, or I've left this behind. And we don't bring forward with us all of the things that we have, all our skills and capabilities and passions and interests, and our personalities and all of it. And so the identity piece can be in the balance for people. And yet, if we take some time and really dissect, you know, who am I and what feels good to me, what's important to me, I think that can boost us. And that's an area I focus on with my clients. In the area of purpose, I think that one can loom large for people. You know, we hear about finding your purpose and it's like this holy grail, and that we'll finally get to the top of the mountain and we'll find it. But for most of us, we're still clawing our way up there, and maybe we'll never reach up to the summit. And so I would like to dispel that too, because purpose sounds like a static state, but actually it's something that can be energized and it can be fluid and it can be a verb. So instead of finding purpose, it's feeling purposeful. And we can do that in a number of ways. We can do it with a capital P, you know, starting a nonprofit or taking care of grandkids full time or starting a business. And that could be with a capital P. It can also be with a lowercase p, and it can be going back to school for a class, or it can be helping a neighbor, or it can be tending our garden or reading a book, you know, feeling purposeful. That's critically important for humans. We want to feel like we matter. And so that's another area that I focus on with my clients. And the way that we get at it is really taking ourselves back through our lives and looking at, well, what did float our boat? What got us excited or energized when we were younger that maybe we want to give a little more attention to? Or if nobody cared, nobody was watching, what would be the things that we would do without those societal constraints around us? Or if money wasn't an object. So just allowing ourselves to be creative and be in that space of reflection to weave our new story, you know, and start to foster that path. Because if we go into retirement with boundaries around what's possible, then that's what we'll live in. We won't be able to see all the possibilities. And so that's where I really work with clients, fostering this perspective of abundance rather than the lack, or that there's possibilities rather than pitfalls, and how we can pivot when those pitfalls maybe come up. So I covered a lot of ground, but touching back to the identity piece and the purpose piece, also critical factors, because this is a new and unique venture for us. You know, we're into new frontiers. I do like to always underscore, though, that it's a new chapter, but it's not a brand new book. And so, again, we bring with us so many things into retirement. And so let's really springboard off of those strengths and at the same time take that incredible opportunity to leave things behind that no longer serve us. That maybe we had some patterns in place at work that really don't represent who we are, or they don't support us in where we want to go. So allowing ourselves to do some of that reflection time as well. If I may, I touched upon transitions too, and that is a pivotal piece. And I know for myself, before I got into the world of coaching, I never really knew about the power of transitions. I knew that I was climbing the corporate ladder and I was making these changes, or when I got married or I had children or any number of things, that was a change. But I didn't really, and I knew it was a transition, but I really operated off of that external change. And when I got into coaching, I did my research paper when I went back to school on transitions, because I was kind of fascinated when we touched upon it, and learning that's that internal change. And when we give ourselves that time to really look at the ending, you know, what do we need to leave behind? What do we need to put a period or exclamation mark around when it comes to career? And then moving into what William Bridges called then the neutral zone, this time of reflection, and recognizing we've got maybe difficult emotions that are coming up. We might be feeling stuck, or we might be feeling indifferent, or really excited, or really scared. There's so much fear or confusion that can be involved in transitions. And allowing those emotions to surface and really navigating, working with them and seeing where that brings us before we embark on that new beginning. So again, I touched on a lot of things. What poses some thoughts for you?
Well, we'll start with identity. If somebody has an executive background where they have in fact been working 70 or 80 hours a week, as opposed to someone who works 9 to 5, maybe 40 hours a week, does the person working twice as many hours a week, do they have a greater adjustment as to who exactly they are? Because that's basically their life. I mean, 80 hours in an office each week, you really become whoever you are in that office.
Such a great question. And honestly, I feel like it's very individual, because I think somebody could be working 40 hours a week, but be so enmeshed in that work, as opposed to somebody 80 hours a week, where yes, they're working 80 hours a week, but maybe for them, they've got balance. They've got things that will allow them to transition easily. I mean, in the main, yes, that person that has that high powered position has more interwoven with their identity. But I do think it's case by case. And for some people, yes, they were working 80 hours, but they don't see a need from an internal standpoint. You know, they're able to then move that external in that external way into their next busy things. If that, I'm not articulating it well, but the point is that really, I think it's where the depth of somebody, where they, and no judgment there, but for those that want to dig deeper and they know that they want more. So if that 80-hour week or that 40-hour week person knows that they want more, then I think that they're going to then be looking closer at what that life can look like post-career. For those that feel like, I just want to fall out, you know, I'm burnt out or I'm tired, or I look at retirement as rest and relaxation, then they're going to follow that course and anything in between. The concern is that when there is a disconnect and when somebody doesn't feel good about the rest and relaxation, they're in discourse about that and a discontent about that, because that's when then our mental well-being, our emotional well-being can really take a hit. And so those are the factors that I want to look at most closely with people is, you know, if they're feeling like they want more, or they're feeling like they don't yet have a vision of what the future could look like and they want support around it, or they're feeling these difficult emotions, that's where then we're able to help. But everybody has their path. So I don't know that I answered it, but I just never look at things as sort of cut and dry. You know, I think each of us comes with our own pathways and how we see our lives and how we go about our lives and at what level we operate in our lives. And again, no judgment, because each of us, you know, that's our path.
The thought that your response triggered in me was, I'm not going to remember who it was, but he was that 80-hour a week person, and he was discussing work-life balance, and he said, yeah, when I'm in the office, it's all about whatever's going on in the office, in the business, whatever. He said, but my family knows that when I come home, there is not a thing that can go on in that office that will disrupt my family time. So when I'm with my family, it's all about my kids, it's all about my spouse. And they know that I'm not going to answer a call from the office when it's their time. And I thought that's really, you know, because to try to get, you know, like, oh, I'm going to do 40 hours at the office and then 40 hours with the kids, you know, that's next door to impossible. But to really look at it is whatever I'm engaged in, I'm 100% engaged in, but I'm also 100% unengaged from all the other things until it's their turn, that sort of thing. And I sort of thought, yeah, I could see that, like, as long as you keep that present in your mind, that
Yes,
could
yeah, and
be.
having that foundation. I just wrote a blog around boundaries. And, you know, I think when we get into retirement, oftentimes we can be saying yes to so many things. And we know that when we say yes to something, we're saying no to something else. And oftentimes we can be no, saying no to ourselves. And so, on the gentleman that you're mentioning, it sounds like he was very clear about boundaries and really able to recognize where he was putting his efforts. And so, I would hope and believe that that served him well. Or will serve him well as he moves into retirement, because he's got a clarity around what his priorities are and what feels purposeful to him in those different facets. So I think it's just an individual thing. But yes, those that are the clients that I've worked with that are very intertwined with their work, it is a matter of trying to kind of almost deconstruct that and step away. And the way that we do that is really starting to gain a strong vision around, how does each define retirement? What does it mean to them? What could it look like for them? And they don't have to have the answers, but we start to really paint that picture. Because when people have a clear vision, not a goal, not that there's something that they're really attached to, but a vision and that GPS of where they want to go, then that confusion and that disconnect or that fear of the next chapter starts to dissipate. Because when we know where we're headed, then we can go down that path. And then we can also allow ourselves to pivot as we need to, but we have more clarity about where we're headed. And I think a lot of people don't have that clarity when they retire. If they have their bank account in order, they figure that the rest will come and it'll fall into place. But you know, we have so many templates for the different milestone events in our lives. Like we know, let's say we're going from high school to college, we know what we need to do to prepare for it. even when we choose a college, we know what factors maybe, but somewhat what factors we want to look at and things. That's one example. But when we go into retirement, we oftentimes don't take that same time for awareness and planning and visioning. And yet that serves us really well as we move from one position in our lives, one milestone in our life into another.
My next thought was, I don't know if it's around purpose or around transition, but I've heard it called the BHAG. It's your big, hairy, audacious goal. And is there any point in sort of trying to define that, and then, if necessary, modify it down to what works, whether it's, with the time available or the money available or the health available, all that sort of stuff. Do you encourage your clients to go like really big and then, okay, let's fine tune?
Yeah, I don't really take that approach. I think I take it more as a stepping stone. So I don't necessarily do the reverse engineering in a way, but that's not to say that that doesn't work. Instead, I kind of build the foundation and have some of these fundamentals. So we do start around, what's your definition of retirement and what's the perfect retirement look like for you? And then we look at, okay, is that sustainable and what piece parts of it? But it isn't really that the big hairy goal. It's really that idea of, that these parts, because I think oftentimes, Agnes, that there can be, again, so much weight around having that big goal. And people oftentimes don't even know what hobbies they enjoy, or they don't really know how they want to live or how they want to live. And so I think it can be a showstopper right there. And so instead, I really do believe in those stepping stones, like what James Clear talks about, taking the smallest step for that vision, but not being so attached to it. So that's kind of the approach I use. And I think too, people sometimes say, "Oh, what's the most exciting thing that or outlandish thing that one of your retirees have done?" And I really sort of step away from that because I think it's those Instagram moments that can kind of throw everybody else off. Like it's like, well, if I can't do an Iron Man when I'm 80, then I'm a loser, or something like that. And I like to really normalize. I like to normalize all of it and say retirement is an unknown. It's a new frontier. It's understandable if you're having difficult emotions around it. You're not alone. So let's really look at what's coming up for you and what do you need in order to move forward. I had one client who was in administration in education, and she was beside herself thinking about retirement. She was so upset. I mean, she came to tears about the idea of retiring. But her husband had retired like 8 years earlier, and he was really, wanting her to retire so that they could spend time doing some things that they had planned out. And she wanted that for him, but she kept putting it off until she got to that year where she thought, I can't put it off any longer. But she described it as almost like a death for her. She felt like pieces of herself were just no longer going to exist. And I think she felt a lot of shame in that. And I think she felt a lot of confusion, like, wow, everybody else I see is having a great time. There's something the matter with me. And yet there's not. And so I was able to share with her and help normalize right away, which I know took such a weight off of her, to be able to say, you're not alone. Why would you expect that of yourself to have all the answers? Or why would you feel good about leaving something that you love? At the same time, are you at choice? Do you feel like you can't stay in the work, that your husband wouldn't be supportive of that? And she said, oh no, he's absolutely whatever I want. So then we were able to kind of take away some of those barriers and allow her to step into her decision, her design, her accountability for the decision. And I think that when we have ownership around those decisions, then whether we've chosen to retire or it's been chosen for us, but owning that decision and then mapping out that pathway. So I think that's also very important for us.
You mentioned not being able to do an Iron Man at age 80. I've often said, If I didn't look like Jane Fonda at 20 and I didn't look like Jane Fonda at 50, I am not going to be looking like Jane Fonda at age 80. So it makes decisions really easy in that regard.
But tell me, do you want to look like her? Because if you want to look like her, I'm going to think we could figure out ways that, you get to wherever you want to go. So.
Well, I was age 40 before I realized that I was never going to have the hourglass figure. So, I mean, yeah, I'd love to, but I'm not willing to put in the work. Let's put it that way.
So I think it's a beautiful thing. So, but I appreciate your story for sure. And I do talk about having realistic optimism. There's on the one end of the spectrum, that's idealistic view that I shared, the rose-colored glasses of endless weekends, travel, leisure. And on the other side, I focus on aging and loss and one in, foot into the grave. And I really try to bring everyone to the middle. It's not an either-or proposition. Let's be realistic. Let's know about the some of the statistics I've shared with you. Let's go in with our eyes wide open, and then let's make the very most of this next chapter by being aware and planful and intentional and getting into action about the things we want. So.
When you talked about the transition part, you talked about the emotions that come to the surface. Are some people sort of surprised by the emotions? And I guess the other side of that question is they must really appreciate having a coach then to sort of acknowledge and find some sort of balance for them or help them in processing.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think that the surprise comes because society tells us that this is going to be the golden years and the best years of your life. And we see things in the media that tell us that it is. And so I think that that can be a surprise when there are those feelings of confusion, or like one of my clients said, he felt lost in the desert, or another one felt like he was going to fail at retirement. And this comes up, these are things that come up with a lot of my clients. And so I think that it's normalizing it and saying that yes, these are emotions that everyone feels, and it makes total sense because you're going into this new frontier, or you've been so busy at work, you haven't even allowed yourself to have some downtime to reflect and really key in on what's important to me or what feels meaningful to me. Work has purpose baked into it. It has connection baked into it. It has that sense of identity baked in as well. And so it's understandable that when we think about leaving that behind, again, where does that leave us? So that's where, yes, I think that a coach can really be of such great support, both as a sounding board, as a thought partner, as walking shoulder to shoulder, and giving some of the tools and pathways, that runway to retirement and through retirement, that I think is just fundamental and opens the door to, oh, okay, I get it now. I can make things happen for myself.
I think a lot of people this age also, like if they have emotions come out of nowhere, they literally go, well, that's really dumb. Like, well, that's how did that happen? And they just sort of try to push them back down and get on with life. Whereas having a coach say, no, like we need to dig a little deeper. We need to, figure out what's going on here.
Yes, well, and I think, for your audience, especially that maybe is in the boomer generation or in the Gen X, where we weren't raised with positive psychology. We were raised to get things done and no pain, no gain, and let's push through. And if emotions come up, we're going to push them down, or we're going to push them away. And it wasn't until like 30 years ago or so when Martin Seligman, the father of positive psychology, came on the scene and said, there's a power in these emotions. And now we see the work of Brené Brown and Adam Grant and many, many others that really say to us, there's power in vulnerability, and it's brave to surface those emotions. And there aren't just three emotions, what is it, angry, sad, and happy, but instead there's probably 83 of them. And so really getting allowing ourselves, giving ourselves that space and grace that the human condition, there are emotions, and our emotions impact our thoughts, which impact our beliefs, which impact our actions. And so we really do want to allow for them. They are like it used to feel like they're not efficient, or they just get in the way. they're frivolous, but they're not. They really are signs for us. Ooh, this needs a little more attention. And if we allow for that, then we can dig a little deeper and say, well, for me, I'm concerned about retirement. Okay, where's that concern coming from? What's it look like for you? What's coming up for you? Or I'm afraid about retirement. The same kinds of questions. And normalizing it and saying, again, you're not alone, and it's important that you're raising this up, because if we don't, we know at some point those emotions are going to come out. They may come out in a very inappropriate way or an unexpected time, but they're not going to go away. They're going to maybe be bubbling under the surface. So it's so much more powerful to allow them to come to the surface and investigate them. But it's not an area that we're very comfortable with. I recently had the opportunity to work with several coaches because I'm in the Retirement Coaches Association, and we put out a book called The Retirement Collective. And my chapter was uncovering the hidden thoughts and emotions in retirement, because that's the state of being that we have. And if we allow for it, wow, there's just so much strength and power and empowerment that comes from recognizing those emotions and navigating.
That might be a good segue into the I'm single, so look out, Rafi. so I had to throw that in. Everybody's gonna wonder what it means. Anyways, all
I
of my choice.
don't tell them.
Rafi's advertising. I'm single, so all my choices only affect me. But you've already talked about some potential re retirees being married. And that can affect a lot of choices. Can you still deal with just the like the one person, or somewhere along the way does that spouse have to sort of enter the conversation?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's up to that individual, but you're absolutely right that when we're talking about having a significant other in our life, and they're either retired or they're going to be retiring, whatever the case may be, it's important that we have clarity around what our retirement vision is, and that we then articulate it and communicate and have a conversation with our significant other. Because otherwise, what can happen is that we make a lot of assumptions, or we start to go down a path, and then we really go off on different directions. I had one client who ended up kind of managing her husband in retirement because she'd been a high powered, she had a lot of people reporting to her, and she took all of those patterns into retirement and started, overseeing what he was doing. There are others that had assumptions about, oh, we'd be traveling a lot, and then it came to clarity that, the other didn't want to do that. And so there can be a lot of disappointment. There can be a lot of disconnect. The statistics show that graying divorces are on the rise. And I think a piece of this is because couples aren't communicating. So I do work with couples as well. I have them go through an assessment, and I have a different assessment for individuals, but go through an assessment where it raises up a lot of questions that allow for then a great discussion and an exchange of ideas and figuring out, what do we do together and what do we do separately, and then we bring those experiences or insights and growth back into the relationship. And so that can be a beautiful thing if we're again planful and aware of it.
Okay, let's talk communication only insofar as our role models, again, air quotes, our parents rarely thought about choices. They started their jobs at age 20 and stayed there until age 65, whether they were happy or not. They didn't talk to us about money or fulfillment. Probably, thinking of my own, probably avoided those subjects. And by age 65, they were old. None of that works for us, yet we're still not sure what to do. Like, what are the alternatives? That's where you come in, I presume.
Yes, yeah, and you're so right. I mean, the whole concept of retirement really is dated. So what I'm hearing you describe is something that worked for that generation, or whether it worked or it didn't, it was that generation. And now, the baby boomer generation, Gen X's, and so forth, we want more. We recognize there can be more, but for us that are still really enmeshed in some of those traditions that we were raised in, it's like, well, I know I want more, but I don't know how to move in that direction. I don't know how to get there. And so I think that you point out something really important, that those are some of the role models we've seen. And again, are we falling into a retirement by design or default? Are we defaulting to the models that we saw in past generations, or are we really defining for ourselves, you know, what's that pathway for us? And so I think that that's, you know, it's very important, and our lives have really changed. So I mentioned that the idea of retirement being outdated, and there really will be, I think, and I don't know at what point, but I think there'll be a reframing and really even a rewording of it, because it really fit back in the, you know, 30s when Social Security had to be brought forward because people were in the factories, they were in the fields, they were tired, and they needed to move out of the workforce, but they needed some support. And generally, people would live for maybe 2 to 5 years after they retired, and then they expired. But as you shared, that has really shifted, and now we know that our health span is a lot longer. And so in that regard, or our lifespan anyway, hopefully our health span too. But then we've got maybe 20 to 30 years on average is what we're hearing. Well, that's a third of our lives. Very, very different than what our parents were expecting. Now, many of them have lived into that, but we want to be more active and more in control and really shaping our destiny and knowing that we can. So I think that's where the shift is that people in these generations that are closer to retirement are really saying, well, what's it mean to me? And do I want to retire at that age? No, I still feel invigorated by the work that I'm doing. Or yes, I'd like to because I want to retire to this. And this is my vision and this is what I'd like to do now. And it opens up that pathway. So we do have that opportunity that maybe our parents didn't when pensions were more the norm, and when and then and it really was that cradle to grave kind of concept in the workplace. No longer the case. So it's important then that we shift our perspective and mindset around it as well, and look at the possibilities and not just feed into what was done in the past.
Let's talk the future. Our kids, do we need to be having, as you know, for those of us who are post 9 to 5, do we need to be having some of these conversations with our kids, or is modeling a purposeful, happy life enough?
Well, I feel as though that idea of purpose and sense of identity and balance, all of those are fundamental. And so at whatever age or life stage, those are the things that I would hope for everyone. And so I think for those of us that are in the closer to retirement generation, you know, yes, if we can really build into that, and then we can emulate it and we can be those role models, I think that that's an incredibly important thing for us to step into. And when I work with clients, I think that they see how they're able to bring that into all those that are in their world that they touch, whether it's their family, friends, their community, their world. As we elevate ourselves, then we're able to elevate everything around us. And so I think that shifting that mindset and seeing that it is that we're not just winding down, but we're moving into whatever else is exciting to us. And if we don't know what that is, that we're taking that time to really determine, well, what is that? But we're living then with purpose, and we're living with connection, and we're living with that feeling that there's more that we have to give.
I gotta thank you. I always come with notes, and you always segue into something I want to ask. This is great. When I was looking at your website and all the rest, I kept on seeing pro-aging and positive aging. And I started sort of, oh, are those different? And what I was seeing in my head was that pro-aging means you're for aging, like you're all for it. And positive aging is the doing. So like doing it in a positive manner. And I don't know if that's right or if that's just my definitions. But both of those can be internal and external. Can you tell me your version?
Yeah, no, and I love that you caught that, and it, because they are different for me, but it's my own definition of it. So I become more and more aware, and I want to continue to broaden my understanding around anti-aging and pro-aging, and that there's so much ageism and that we oftentimes can perpetuate it. So that when we say, oh, I'm having a senior moment, or when we're saying, you know, wow, you look so good for your age, or any number of things, or even that I feel invisible, which I hear so very often, we're putting ourselves then, we're making the age the descriptor, we're labeling ourselves, we're putting ourselves in a box. And so I think for all of us to really heighten our awareness around pro-aging and shift away from this concept that we want to stay young forever, or that there's something wrong as we age. It's not a healthy mindset. It's not a purposeful mindset. It's not a supportive one. Studies show that, and early on, people start to take on this idea of aging is bad. And studies show that people with that kind of mindset, it shortens their life by 7.5 years. And so, and we know that, you know, our thoughts can really influence a lot of things around our health, around our cognition and everything. So pro-aging for me is about that. It is kind of that external, but also how we talk to ourselves. The positive aging is this perspective, is this mindset about the possibilities, about the ability to continue to grow and thrive and try things and experiment. That's where I look at as positive aging. I have a credential in what's called positive intelligence, and this idea that oftentimes we let these difficult or negative emotions, which in positive intelligence terms are saboteurs. You know, if we have an avoider saboteur, a pleaser saboteur, a victim saboteur, that they can really hijack our happiness. And so by recognizing that these negative emotions are signals that, oh, there's something that needs more attention. You know, why do I feel this need to please people? What is it? What's happening for me? What's that saboteur trying to tell me? And then shifting into a more positive mindset, which in positive intelligence terms is a sage perspective, where we're feeling empowered, or we're feeling empathetic, or we're feeling like we want to explore or learn more, get into action. And so that's what I speak about then with a positive mindset when as we age, because oftentimes we can adopt this feeling of our world getting smaller and becoming more insular. And yes, we're going to be experiencing potentially more loss as we age. But if that's our focus, then it is that half empty glass, and it can take us in that downward spiral, as opposed to recognizing that, but with blameless discernment, saying that there are gifts from all of this. There are springboards that I can take from these difficult experiences and move it into a direction that serves me and others. This served me very well, and maybe some of your listeners are dealing with this too, because my parents are both dealing with a lot of difficulties. My father has Alzheimer's, was diagnosed in 2018, and my mom has been dealing with depression. And so recognizing that and going through all of that with them, initially I was kind of, it was really pulling me down, and maybe that's the experience many of you have had too. And yet I was able, through my view of a positive mindset and my learning around positive intelligence, really see some of the gifts and opportunities in this very difficult time, and really being able to see the beauty in my parents and the learnings that I could get for myself, and how I could be of support to them, how I can be of support to my family, how I can be more empathetic with those around me. So there have just been so many gifts. So that's an illustration, a personal one, of I think that positive mindset that we can have as we age, if we're aware and if we step into that.
A big part of my career was elder care. So if anybody wants to hear the positives of the dementias and the aging and all that, call me up. A couple of weeks ago, I actually talked to somebody at length about ageism, and we can get it from people younger than us that sort of put us on the shelf or think we're not capable or competent. We can do it to those younger generations, and we can do it to ourselves. And I think just being really aware of the fact that, you know, it is what it is. We are the age we are. And I've had a few people say, "Oh yeah, well, 70 is the new 40," and I'm going like, "No, this is what 70 looks like. It is what it is." And there's a lot of people out there at age 70 who are vibrant and busy and having a great life. And yeah. So,
Yeah, but
just
not having to then strive to be 40, just living your
no,
life.
oh,
And so I think that is where we get all these messages, and that's why I try to just keep it really individualized to really look at what's of interest to you? What do you see as your capabilities? Where are you willing to risk a little or experiment a little and try things? But each of us makes those decisions. I just think that when the world becomes more of that oyster, that then we can start to see, well, what all is possible. Maybe take it to hope that people step into that.
Well, and let's talk financials for a moment, because by the time you've finished buying all those anti-aging creams and the wrinkle creams and the eye serums and the memory pills and the everything else supplements, it's like you could probably go on a really nice vacation. It's just aging is such big business for those groups who are pushing the anti-aging, or you don't need to look 70, like whatever that means.
No, I think that's a really important point, and I think that's where like oftentimes people think that, oh, I don't have the money, and so then I'm not going to be able to enjoy these years in retirement. And it's again, what's the mindset there? Because as you're sharing, how are you spending your money? Where are you putting your focus? What is important to you? I had one client who was very upset because she was 71, but she said, I should have retired at 65, but I couldn't afford to. So there's a disconnect there. And she came to me, her financial advisor recommended we speak. And there was such a resistance around having to continue to work. But when we started to really dissect it, and I said, well, share with me, okay, so you live in this beautiful home, so you could sell that. If finances is the most important thing and retiring is the most important thing, and you could sell that home. I mean, we're just kind of talking through things. And she said, oh no, I love my home. And I said, well, share with me, what is it about your home? So she was really able to share all the things she loved, and I think started to connect with, okay, I've got this in my life. And then I said, and you've shared some really expensive hobbies that you have. So what if you let go of those hobbies? Oh no, I have friends through it. I have this, like that. So my point is that as we went through these different piece parts where really that financial picture could shift, she started to really recognize what she had in her life that she chose to have in her life, took more of that responsibility, and also deepened her gratitude about what she had. And that made such a difference. And she was really able to let go of this, I can't retire, because she could retire. It was really so much about it was that mindset, or like you're mentioning, where we're putting our money. So,
Yeah, we've been talking about mindset all the way through without calling it by its name, but it's so important in every facet of life at any age, your mindset. You can be good or it can be crap, but oftentimes you make that choice.
I do think in the retiring generations, again, the boomers and the Gen Xs, I think sometimes there hasn't been as much understanding for on an individual level. We hear about mindset, but it's like, okay, I know I should have a good mindset, but I don't know how to get there, or I don't know really what that means for me. And so I think that is an area that we all can really grow and deepen our understanding of, but we first have to be aware that there are pathways to improving our mindset. And there's research that tells us that when we do, that we can start to really, and this hopefully doesn't sound too woo-woo, and you've probably heard a lot about this too, but the research around the neuroplasticity of our brains and that survivor brain that we were all born with, skews to the negative because our ancestors, they had to have that negative mindset that, if they go into the jungle, something's going to eat them. And so that had to come to the forefront, but it no longer serves us, yet we still carry those patterns. So with neuroplasticity, the research tells us that the more that we envelop a positive mindset, we can start to shift those neural pathways into more positive ones. But we have to be mindful about it. We have to be intentional. And really, when something comes up that's difficult, it doesn't mean that we have to overlook it or push it aside, but step into it and then see, okay, what's needed, and move ourselves then in a positive direction. And by doing so, we'll continuously then build some of these neural pathways that are more positive. And so then that positive will beget more positivity, and we'll just keep on that upward spiral.
Yeah, yeah. And that's exactly how I explain it too, is once you turn it around and start going up, it goes up as easily as it went down. Like once yes. you once you get the momentum going.
The momentum. But beautiful.
You yeah. use the term woo-woo, and I love that term, because a definition I once heard is for woo-woo is anything is possible.
Oh. I love that.
And I thought, isn't that perfect? You know, so many things that people call woo-woo, yes. It's like, I can't prove it is, and you can't prove it isn't. So it just is what it is.
You know? Yeah. So, yeah. I know for myself, and I didn't mention it, you know, as I made this transition from corporate into coaching, but I really was of that, I spoke earlier about positive intelligence and saboteurs, and I had very strong hyper achiever saboteur, very strong hyper rational. So really living more in that logical place and that pushing forward, driving kind of space. And so I think that, again, it can be very difficult to look at some of these things like meditation or mindfulness or woo-woo things if we're kind of more of that ilk. And so, because even when I started coaching, I did paper also on meditation, because I was one of those that is just a waste of time. That's just, you know, like, I don't know who's doing it, but it's a bunch of malarkey. And yet then when I really learned about just quieting the brain, that just allows not just for that calm, but also that clear-headed focus, and really allowing you to clear out that clutter, almost the cobwebs getting dusted away. And so, but I think, again, I just really want to express to the listeners, if you're not in that place, you know, some of the things that we're talking about are just like, nah, that's not for me. That's the woo-woo that Agnes and Wendy are talking about. Maybe just putting a toe in. You know, it doesn't have to be that you're now on a meditative retreat for a month. It can just be that you just give yourself like a 2-minute little mini brain breather and just do some breathing. Or it can be just walking out in nature. Or it can be just sitting and writing down, I really want to retire. What about that is important to me? You know, just take a step into whatever area is kind of needing a little bit of attention.
Well, you talk about dipping a toe in. All they need to do is go back over past episodes of this podcast. I have interviewed on numerology, on forest bathing, on meditation, all sorts of things. And it's been interesting, because for me, numerology, for example, I didn't have a clue. So it was really interesting learning about it. Yeah, yeah. So that's how you dip your toe in, just an hour here, an hour there.
Yes. Yeah. And it doesn't mean then that you have to go all in.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What haven't we talked about that you would like mid-age women to think about?
Gosh, we really covered a lot of ground. So what would I think I'm just going to go back to that retirement by design, not default, and recognizing that if we're feeling unsure, if we're feeling stuck, if we're feeling fearful about that next chapter, that's totally understandable. It's a new frontier. And so rather than moving forward with all of those difficult emotions, let's really stop and think about, you know, what's needed here. And put pen to paper. We haven't talked about, you know, that when we really give that reflection time and we write things down, we start to gain a stronger sense of what all those swirling thoughts are. We start to crystallize what's important to us or what's needed. And so I think just really encouraging people to take a little bit of time and answer some of those questions that we've raised today about, you know, my identity in retirement, or who am I going to, what am I going to be doing in retirement? Who do I want to be in retirement? Beyond some of the things that, again, are on that to-do list or that bucket list.
What does coaching with you look like? You have programs and private coaching.
Yes, I do. I work with couples, I work with individuals, and I work with groups. And what it really steps through is a number of the things that we talked about today. So it starts with an assessment, or for couples, it speaks to that questionnaire to really raise awareness. Because I think when we're aware of what we're stepping into, then we can take that accountability and agency for moving ourselves in a direction that serves us. So it starts with that. And then I really do share a lot of the fundamentals. You know, we talked about that sense of identity and feeling purposeful and transitions. So we go into a lot of exercises about that, so that it's not just words, but in fact, people are able to get really clear on, okay, what feels purposeful to me, or what do I need to leave behind as I move from career into retirement? And then we really look at that balance that you spoke about earlier. We know that oftentimes we lose that in career, because in a 24-hour day, if we're working 8, 10, 12, 14 hours a day, and oh yeah, we need to sleep, it doesn't leave a lot of time for other things. Well, now we have this time abundance. So how are we going to be breaking it up and giving more attention to areas that maybe were overlooked when we were in career? So we look at all of those piece parts, including our emotional, our mental well-being, our social connections, the health span going along with the lifespan, and also what feels purposeful. So that's the pathway, that's the roadmap that I take people through. And so I have, you know, anywhere from one session to, you know, 10 sessions and then onward, because oftentimes people want to check back, depending where they are, because we know that if we have some accountability to someone else and we have somebody who is in our corner, that is objective and is, you know, going to hold space for us, that allows us to move forward that much more rapidly and more authentic.
I'm really big on accountability partners. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Thank you. The name of my company is Conflex Retirement Coaching, and that's spelled Conflux. So you can find me there, conflexretirementcoaching.com, or email me at wendy@conflexretirementcoaching.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, Wendy Leggett. And I'd love to, if you message me on my website, I'd love to send you a little exercise. You know, we're talking a lot about reflections, we're talking about accountability, and so a little no regrets retirement. I'd love to share that with your listeners as
Cool. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
well. Please.
I love it when there's that hesitation. I'm waiting for somebody to say, no.
Well, once you ask it, I might say, no.
No, we touched on this before it clicked record. Huntington Beach, California. Were you born lucky or did you make a really smart choice? I love Huntington Beach.
I did make a smart choice. I was born in Colorado, moved when I was 9 to Washington State, and because my father's position took him there, but I always loved being in the sun. So my big reason for moving to California, and when I got married, I said to my husband, that's the one, no, I didn't put it as a deal breaker, but I said, I really want to move to California, is because I wanted to be in the sun, which now, of course, you know, I try to not be in the sun too much, but I just love the sun. So that's, and especially leaving Washington, which was beautiful, absolutely, but very rainy. So we have a lot of sunshine, and that's what brought me here. So that was it a smart choice at the time? Was it because I loved having a tan, so it really was a dumb choice or whatever, but that was my choice.
Very early 2000s, I took my children to Disneyland. They were early teens, 13, 14, and 16. And it was one of those where, like, a series of unfortunate events. So, anyways, we did our Disneyland, but I had convinced the airline that to make it up to us, they had to let us stay over for several more days and fly us back when I wanted to come back. And
All right.
we moved from Anaheim to Huntington Beach, found a, I don't know, something simple like a Hojo, I don't know. But it was just fabulous, and the beaches and the sunshine, and it was just, yeah, A few, it was only a few days, but it was a few days of complete and total bliss. So I have this very soft spot in my heart now for Huntington Beach.
Oh, that's a lovely story. And isn't that great how it, you were able to turn a situation into a positive? So yeah, that's great. Oh, thank you for sharing that.
Okay, website, your website link is in the show notes. All of your links are on your page at our website.
I
Listeners,
appreciate it.
where are you on this journey of work and post-work life? Because of our age, one of my usual questions is whether retirement is in the crosshairs or in the rear view. Either way, talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Or maybe there was a question I didn't ask Wendy. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. Whether your friends have left the 9 to 5 or are thinking about it, Wendy has given us lots to consider. Your friends need the same info and ideas and inspiration. Leave stars and reviews where you can. I keep on asking for those. Don't make me beg. And you can support this podcast by buying me a coffee. That's such a cheap option. The link is in the show notes and above Wendy's head on her page at our website. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free. You'll get an email telling you about a new episode. Wendy Leggett, thank you for being my guest today and giving us so much to think about, whether we're considering retirement or have pulled the plug, but are really hoping there's more.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure. I appreciate all your insightful questions and great stories.
That's great. Have a great rest of the week.